washing your hair in slow motion in a basin, because you're worth it. This is Mirror.
Hey everybody, welcome to Seen and Heard.
This is the podcast where two entertainment assistants go through the Sight and Sound Top 100 Greatest Films of All Time list. I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
And we're back this week for our first Tarkovsky on the list. Maybe you've heard of him. I feel like that joke is sold at this point. I always pull that stupid shit. This is Mirror from 1975. This is number 19 on the list.
It is number 19.
Number 19.
Though there is no number 18. Which is so weird because last time we were at the top of the list, it was Persona. And Persona has 48 votes and it is tied with Seven Samurai. And they're both number 17 on the list. This week's movie, right under Persona, it's number 19. It has 47 votes. Explain that to me. Like, someone from Sight and Sound, please explain this to us.
Well, it's because there's still only 100 movies on there. So if there are multiple movies at the same number, then they're going to skip some numbers just because otherwise they'd have more than 100.
What? Why do they have movies with multiple numbers then? Oh, the ties, but then...
Yeah, because they didn't want to break the ties, which I feel like they should have, but they didn't.
Okay.
Honestly, they should ask us for the next list.
Yeah.
They should have us weigh in and we will break the ties.
Yeah, totally.
I want to take this opportunity to reiterate that we will be taking the month of November off. There will be no Seen and Heard for the month of November because it's almost our year mark and we just need a little bit of a break. So we're going to, you know, we each write and direct and stuff. So we're going to be working on other projects during that time. But I promise, I swear, we'll be back in December, the first Tuesday in December, which I believe is December 6th for Singing in the Rain. So that'll be our first film back. So, yes.
I'm really looking forward to both the break and also the coming back.
Me too. And we will be back. We're not just saying that.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like podcasts sometimes just kind of take these breaks and then they lag coming back or they never come back. But we're coming back because we're looking forward to the movies in the middle of the list so much.
Yes. Yes, we are.
And we're so excited. It's weird. I feel like... I feel like we've been doing this for a year, but we haven't made that much progress. We're still at the top, like the 20s of both ends of the list.
I think because we're doing this ping pong order, it makes it seem like we're chiseling away less, but actually we have. I mean, we've done 40 something odd episodes, and I know some of those were films that were not on the list, but most of them are.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're almost halfway through the list.
Well,
but still, we're just getting started, and obviously there's a top 250 Sight and Sound,
and
so once
we have
finish,
a new list coming out.
Yeah, there's a new list coming.
So we're going to have fun with that.
Yeah. So we won't be going anywhere anytime soon.
You can't get rid of us.
Anyway, before we get into Mirror, what have you been watching lately, Jackie?
I watched Patterson by Jim Jarmusch.
Oh, yeah, I like that one.
I loved it. It was like, I think, you know, I'm trying to figure out how I decided to sit down and watch that the other day, because I almost want to say because I watched Mirror and it's this movie with like poetry read aloud in the film. I think I was doing some research about Mirror and then someone referenced it, or I have no idea how I got the idea to pop into my head, let me sit down and watch Patterson. But I'm so happy I did, because it is kind of like, not really, but it was just interesting that there are two movies with poetry read aloud. Patterson is so beautiful and simple and lovely and really heartbreaking. Like, it's heartwarming and heartbreaking. I loved it. I don't want to give too much away, but I just think that Adam Driver's performance in it is so nuanced. The ending makes me smile while also making me extremely sad. And that's what you want out of a movie.
I think it's too, it's like, I love Jarmusch. I feel like a lot of his films are slightly detached and like very cool. And what I love about Patterson is how warm and almost like, it's so unembarrassed to just be genuine. And
I love it. And that's like the theme of the movie, really, is just like being unembarrassed about being normal, not being being unembarrassed, being content, being in love. Like, it's just, I love it. So that's what I watched. I also watched The Man Who Knew Too Much, but the 50s version with Jimmy Stewart and Doris Day.
Was that your first time?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
That's the I actually have not seen the Peter Lorre one. I've only seen the Jimmy Stewart one.
I haven't seen the Peter Lorre one either, but the plots are very different. I liked it. It's like,
it's fluff.
It's nowhere near, it's nowhere near anything like any important Hitchcock, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's like really entertaining. Yeah. It's just him in like his golden period, just like as like a movie making machine.
Exactly. Doris Day was so interesting because I don't know. I always, when I think Doris Day, I just think of like 60s sex comedies and
with Rock Hudson.
Yeah. And so like seeing her in a Hitchcock, and like she is this Hitchcock blonde in this movie. She's even wearing a gray suit at one point.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I thought she did a great job.
I think Que Sera Sera comes from
that
movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, what have you been watching?
Not that much. I did revisit an old favorite, Poltergeist, which I hadn't seen in a couple years, but I grew up on that movie. In fact, I was thinking about it and I was like, is this the first horror movie I ever saw? And I think it might have been. Again, it's like PG. Have you seen Poltergeist?
Greg.
It's like a Spielberg movie. It's like PG. It's like a PG Spielberg movie.
I actually haven't seen it. No, I haven't.
It's cool just because like that and E.T. were released like a week apart or something. And even though Tobe Hooper directed Poltergeist, the word on the street is that Spielberg ended up doing most of the directing because it feels just like a Spielberg movie and not a Tobe Hooper movie. Not to discredit Tobe Hooper in any way, because I love, like, when Tobe Hooper was good, he was really good. Like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1 and 2. But it's great and it still holds up, and it's just a good time. It's not particularly scary. Like, it's scary when you're like 6 years old. But I think that it's so big now because it's such a like special effects extravaganza that it's not scary as an adult. Like, it's not subtle. It's not, you know, you're safe to watch Poltergeist.
I'm sure I am. You said Texas Chainsaw Massacre and it reminded me of this hilarious video I have to show you of, this is my Isabelle Huppert plug for the episode. It's like this quick interview someone's doing with her. It's like really quick cuts and it's like, the question, it just like comes on the screen and it says, what movie affects you the most? And she says Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Or like, what movie affects you the same time every single time you see it? Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And then what movie do you have the most like emotional response to? She says Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And then she says, c'est un très beau film. Like, she literally calls it a beautiful movie.
It is. Honestly, it is.
And I just thought that was hilarious.
I revisited the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre a couple years ago because I hadn't seen it since I was like a teenager in high school. And I was genuinely shocked at how potent it still is and how it's like head and shoulders above in terms of just like what a raw, crazy experience it is. Like, in terms of like Halloween and Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, which are all very tame in comparison. The first Texas Chainsaw Massacre is still like really rough. Like, it's nightmare fuel. Ugh. And the second one is basically a comedy. He's basically making, that's a new discovery of mine and I love it to death. Texas Chainsaw 2 with Dennis Hopper, which is basically a satire of the first movie. And it's this weird dark comedy, but it's also still like really intense. And I love both 1 and 2. I think they're like truly great films.
That's interesting. One of my friends told me, he's like, you should watch horror movies because it makes you think of like how bad those people have it.
It's true.
Like, they're not, you know?
Yeah, at least that's not you getting diced up out there.
But then I stay up thinking about that.
I know. Yeah, horror movies when I was a kid did so much psychological damage.
Exactly.
And even non-horror movies. But yeah, that's a conversation for another time. Should we get into this week's movie?
Let's do it.
From 1975, this is Andrei Tarkovsky's Mirror.
Thank you.
Mirror was released in 1975. It is a Soviet-Russian film directed by Andrei Tarkovsky, co-written by Tarkovsky and Alexander Mishurin, cinematography by Georgi Rehberg, music by Edward Artemyev. The film is an exploration into the dreams, memories, and national identity of an unseen poet named Alexei. He remembers his pre-war childhood days spent at his family cabin, where he was raised by his stern but sensitive mother, Maria, after his father left the family. In modern times, Alexei's relationship with his mother is somewhat strained, as is his relationship with his ex-wife, Natalia, and they argue about the future of their young son, Ignat. Historical footage from World War II, the Spanish Civil War, and the Sino-Soviet border conflict are intercut within the film as characters meditate on Russia's role in the world. Alexei remembers being rifle-trained as a child during World War II and a brief moment of reunion when his father returns from the war. Finally, Alexei is on his deathbed with an unnamed illness. And one last oniric sequence takes us to the countryside, where he was raised. An image of his young mother and father in love intercut with his mother walking through the fields as an old woman. The film stars Margarita Terkova as Maria and Natalia. She plays both characters. Ignat Danilsev as Ignat and Alexei as a youth. And Oleg Yankovsky as the father. Tarkovsky's own mother played the older Maria in the film. Fun fact. Throughout the film, poetry composed and read by the director's father, Arseny Tarkovsky, plays over sequences. The first version of the script was written in 1968. It was titled Confession, and it was made up of 28 scenes split between Tarkovsky and Mishurin, split between three forms: interviews with Tarkovsky's mother, filmed with hidden cameras, recreations of his childhood memories, and newsreels for historical context. However, the Soviet Film Committee, the USSR State Committee for Cinematography, had a problem with the non-linear and abstract elements of the film. He went on to make Solaris. Then the film committee had a new head who approved the script in 1973, but they got rid of the whole mother interview stuff. The country home of Alexei is a faithful adaptation of Tarkovsky's real childhood home. And he had a really miserable time editing this. At one point, there were like 20 different edits. And apparently, yeah, it was torture. The name of the film was decided while shooting. Other titles included A Bright Day, Confession, Redemption, Martyrology, which I thought was interesting. And apparently, he was originally thinking of casting one of our faves as the mother slash...
B.B. Anderson.
Yes!
Yeah.
In the role of, the mother slash Natalia. But Margarita Terkova looked just like his mother, apparently. And I think she's incredible. Because of its ethereal, abstract nature and mixed reviews, distribution was extremely limited. The committee did not allow it to screen at Cannes, but news of some critical success spread to New York, and European distribution came in 1978. That's all I got for specs on Mirror.
I think that covers it, yeah.
I mean,
you do a good job with specs.
Aw, thanks. You do a good job with, like, Pauline.
Oh, thank you.
And also introducing us and signing off.
Oh.
What are your initial thoughts?
So it's funny. I would count Tarkovsky among, I love his work. He only made 7 features in his lifetime, but each of them is incredibly special. You know, he's the kind of filmmaker that, again, his life unfortunately was cut short kind of early, but every film he made, he approached in the kind of the way that like Kubrick did or something, like almost as if it would be his last. Like each film was so incredibly special and profound, and there's such jewels, you know, like Tarkovsky's filmography is like one jewel after the other. So I do have to say that this is the last of his films I saw. I've seen the other 6 much before this. In fact, I tried to watch this movie for the first time 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember, I think I got like 10, 20 minutes in, maybe it was a little bit more, but I was just like not in the mood. I was like, oh, I can't do this right now. Like, especially when they started cutting in like newsreel footage and stuff, I was like, this is too dense right now. Like, I'm not in the right headspace to see this. And so I turned it off and unfortunately didn't get around to seeing it again until we prepped for this episode this week. Also funny that I'm actually like going through the Tintin books right now, and the one I just read the night before this was Tintin in the Land of the Soviets, which
Tintin books? Yeah, You're reading those?
Uh-huh, yeah. They're great. They're so good. But it's the first Tintin in the Land of the Soviets is a very like it's like a piece of right wing propaganda like against the Soviet Union. So it's like a pretty uncomfortable read in that respect, but I just thought it was funny that I read that the night before
That's
I watched
really
this.
Funny.
But yeah, so look, I'm going to be completely blunt about it. This is my least favorite Tarkovsky film as of now. There are some stunningly beautiful stretches in here. Of course, the cinematography is just some of the best ever. Like all of his films. I mean, it is truly like, you know, you take this footage to a DP and you're like, get me this look. Like, that's the look. And I mean, to say that his films are some of the most like sumptuously photographed films ever is like an understatement. Like, his films are truly immersive. Like, you could step into them. Like, they're just so, they're painterly, they're stark, they're just incredible. So despite some like really great stretches of this, and for the first 30 minutes, I was like, this is a five. Like, this is a fucking masterpiece. All I could say in my head after the first like 30 to 45 minutes was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, at a certain point, the movie started to lose me. And maybe this is just my own failings. And maybe I'll come back to this movie in a few years and be like, no, actually, this is a masterpiece. Not like I'm planning on doing that. Or, you know, I'm going to come back to it for sure. But, and I don't dislike it, but I just think as far as Tarkovsky films go, for me, it's a little bit too jumbled. Like, I kind of prefer when he has a little bit stronger of a narrative. And I also like the impressionistic stuff. He does it well. But for me, like, this sounds really cliche to say, but like, an example of this movie that I like much more is Malick's Tree of Life, because you get this impressionistic coming of age, or not coming of age, but just like someone, a childhood remembered. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that movie, somehow Malick kind of like pulls that off a little bit better than Tarkovsky. I think Tarkovsky's strengths are not necessarily in impressionism. So again, I don't have an attack against this movie. Like, this movie should have done this or should have done that. It just, at a certain point, it started losing me. And even though it's one of his shorter films, by the end, I was like kind of ready for it to be over. And it's sad for me to say, but again, there are some really breathtaking sequences in here. But at the end of the day, it ranks at the bottom for me of Tarkovsky's work. Anyway, what about you?
Well, I've only seen Ivan's Childhood and this. This is like my second time watching this, actually.
What was the first one you saw?
Ivan's Childhood.
Oh, okay. Good place to start, honestly.
Yeah. You know, we just did Persona. We've done Color of Pomegranates, these abstract impressionistic movies. And then I watched this and I just am reminded so much each time I watch one of these. What I love about them is I could just rewatch them constantly. Like, I don't think I can get sick of them. It's the joy of discovery. It's the joy of feeling a different way every time you watch it, because you've noticed something new or you interpret something in a different way. And I've discovered really with this podcast, I think that I really like that. This is such a deeply beautiful film. Actually, I think it is a masterpiece.
Good.
No.
Most people do. Yeah. I'm in the minority
on this one.
Because the
way that the camera moves in this movie is otherworldly.
Oh, yeah.
It's another level of omniscient. It's almost like God. It is God. Like, and I love the fact that you never see the protagonist. You never see adult Alexei's face.
Do see it for a second.
When?
When he's like laying down in the grass. You see it for a brief second.
Laying down in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
When is he laying down in the grass?
It's in the last like 10 or 15 minutes of the movie. And she's laying there with him. You see
that's
like his profile.
Dad.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, see? This movie lost me.
But that's the dad, because he's asking her, what do you want, a boy or a girl?
Oh, okay.
They're in love. You thought that was mother's son?
I don't know.
What? Greg, that's like one of my favorite parts. Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Wow.
I'm serious.
But listen, I will admit, the newsreel footage takes me out of it. It does. Also, the shooting, first of all, I like the Spanish Civil War footage. I think that's really cool. And the Matador, like, I love that stuff. But when it gets into the the rifle shooting,
it goes on for too long.
That takes me out of it. Yeah. That scene goes on for too long, and it's not even Alexei. It's about this other little boy who I guess is from like Leningrad, but like, and I understand it's a really sad way to depict a nation and a life at war. You know, a childhood where literally you need to learn how to shoot a gun. But something about it, I think it's because it's not actually about Alexei. It's about some random kid.
My problem with it is that his filmmaking is so beautiful that it's such a, and I'm sure he intended this, but it's so jarring when he just like holds on this newsreel footage. You're like, take me back to the movie. Like, tell me this in your movie. Don't just show me the footage.
Yeah, but I also love it. What I like about the newsreel footage is the added audio that is put in. Mm-hmm. Like when they're walking through the water. Particularly,
yeah,
a lot of good water sounds in this movie. Yeah,
well,
he must have been having like a field day.
Honestly, that's one of the reasons that I love him so much, because all of his movies, there's running water somewhere. Like,
really,
it's like in this movie, it's like running down the walls of the house and stuff.
God,
like, yeah,
so
it's just like he understands, he gets it.
So let's talk about Tarkovsky, because I know you want to. So Tarkovsky would eventually leave the USSR to make his last two movies abroad. And we saw this with Parajanov. It's the constraints of the Soviet Film Committee. These directors with incredible minds knew that they didn't belong in a world with censorship.
Yeah.
And he made Nostalgia. Oh. His last two movies were made abroad. Nostalgia in Italy. The Sacrifice in Sweden.
My God.
And he died in Paris. So he does have but it's funny because when he made this, he wasn't even like a displaced person. He was still living in the USSR.
Right, just battling against
the
censorship.
But there's so many signs of this, of like living outside your country. And of course, the whole thing with their Spanish friends. And
yeah,
it's like almost like he was thinking about it and like pre-feeling this feeling because he knew that he had to leave.
Yeah.
Bergman is a big Tarkovsky fan.
Yeah, we've talked about this on the last couple Bergmans we did. Yeah, they kind of like fed off of each other. And you can see it, right? Like in terms
of course,
why they loved each other so much.
You know what's so funny? In that Bergman interview I watched for the Persona episode, the one with him and Liv and Bibi, he said in it like that he loves Tarkovsky so much, but like he would rather watch a random American Western than watch a Tarkovsky movie,
what?
Which I think is so hilarious. Because he's like, and he said, I would rather watch that than a Bergman or Tarkovsky movie. Bergman said that himself in the interview.
Yeah, he's being cute.
And he's being cute, and he's talking about how like it's so real and it's so beautiful and like it's art, and then like obviously, I don't know, it's like...
Right, it's entertainment versus art. Yeah.
So Tarkovsky wrote a book.
Oh, I want to say too that one of my favorite, and I don't have the exact quote, I'm paraphrasing, but one of my favorite things that one filmmaker said about another filmmaker was Bergman about Tarkovsky. And Bergman said, I feel like the first time I saw a Tarkovsky movie, I was given a key to a room that I never had the key to before.
I have that quote written here.
I mean, come on. What
says,
what better way to say it?
Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, read it.
My discovery of Tarkovsky's first film was like a miracle. Suddenly, I found myself standing at the door of a room, the keys of which had until then never been given to me. It was a room I had always wanted to enter and where he was moving freely and fully at ease.
Oh, God. It's so good.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful. And it's the perfect way to describe a Tarkovsky movie. I think even by today's standards, you watch a Tarkovsky movie and it's unlike anything you've ever seen.
Yeah. And, you know, the Soviet Film Committee thought that he was elitist. But in doing my research, a lot of what came up was that the Russian people in particular, like Mirror is their favorite Tarkovsky movie,
mm-hmm.
which is so weird because it's like so abstract. But he actually wrote a book about cinema called Sculpting in Time.
Yes, one of the classic like cinema texts.
And he quotes a letter he received from some random female worker, like when Mirror was released. It says, everything that torments me, everything I don't have and that I long for, that makes me indignant or sick or suffocates me, everything that gives me a feeling of light or warmth and by which I live, and everything that destroys me, it's all there in your film. This was her describing Mirror.
Yeah.
Like, that is just beautiful to me. Like, well, that is incredible. He has another story. Sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but
no.
He has another story where he was saying how like some critics were sitting around and like arguing about the meaning of Mirror and having this like long discussion. And then a cleaning woman walks in and she interrupts them and she says, "It's very simple. A man fell ill and thought he might die. He remembered all the terrible things he'd done to others and wanted to apologize. That's all." Apparently that's what she said. And like Tarkovsky died. Like he just loved that. And I think that that's beautiful. I love this movie because if you just have a little bit of context, I feel like everything is so clear. Everything is so free. Everything is so beautiful to just make you feel what you want to feel. You need I think you need a little bit of context, but not that much.
Yeah.
And of course, the Russian people didn't need any context.
Well, it should be said, too, that when it first came out, people were completely divided on it. Like, people loved it and hated it. Yeah, it's one of those films. You know, I think this is why I put off watching this movie for this long, because I knew that it was divisive among Tarkovsky fans, and some considered it his greatest work and stuff. And so I almost didn't want to watch it just because the Tarkovsky movies I know and love. And it's like, that's like weird.
Yes.
Maybe it's kind of weird, but like there's something about, so there's a point in the movie in which Alexei literally says, this comes out of his mouth. He says, "Words can't really express everything a person feels. It's like they're too feeble." He literally says that in the movie. And I think what I love so much about Tarkovsky's films is that they are indescribable. Like, never once in all the times I've seen Stalker and Nostalgia and stuff, I love those are probably my two favorites, especially Nostalgia. Like, people love Stalker. Like, that's like the big one that people know, or Solaris. Nostalgia might be my favorite. And that one is like, I don't know. I feel like you just don't hear that one brought up that much. I actually had the pleasure of seeing that one on film at the Egyptian Theater before they remodeled and like Netflix bought it. But it was like a spiritual experience. But what I love so much about his films is that I've never really tried to break any of them down, because there is a quiet mysticism about them. There's a sort of very vague magical quality to all of his films. And I've never wanted to go deeper, if that makes any sense. And I think I like Mirror the least because it requires the most digging.
But I don't think it does. That's my thing. And look at those examples that I just named. Yes, you need to know that during the Spanish Civil War, the Soviet Union evacuated a bunch of kids out of Spain and into Russia. That's what that newsreel footage is, where like the parents are saying goodbye. First of all, the music playing in that scene, it's some like beautiful Spanish song.
Yeah.
And people are literally running in the streets. And it's amazing. I think that one is amazing. Like, you need to know that. And then you just need to know war has been raging on seamlessly forever in this country when this movie was made.
Yes, but like, okay, from a narrative standpoint, because most of his narratives are easy, like, they're easy to follow. I feel like saying easy to follow sounds so simple, but they're just like, they're laid out, and therefore he can kind of do his magic with all the other stuff that he does so well. Whereas in this film, I was genuinely, and I know this is kind of the point of the movie, but I was genuinely struggling with like where we were, when we were, who we were with. Like that stuff. And again, maybe if I watch this movie a couple more times, I'll like get it down. But just on a first viewing, it was disorienting, and not like in a pleasing way. Like again, I was really with this movie for the first, I want to say like 45 minutes.
Can I just say the first sequence of like the first memory of mom sitting on the fence? That is incredible. Up until the fire, and even the printing press part is amazing.
Yes, yes. And that whole stretch, I was in love with the movie. I was speechless. And then it's sad when this happens. And again, this is just my emotional response to the movie. But after that point, I'm trying to pinpoint a part in the movie and when it happened.
It's
probably
when the first like newsreel footage starts coming up.
I think, honestly.
Like the matador. Like, do you like the part
Matador.
Spanish people?
Yeah, I actually really like that part. It's like as it kind of drones on and he uses that footage a little more.
It's the rifle shooting. I think it's the rifle shooting.
I actually don't have a huge problem with the non-newsreel rifle stuff. I love that scene with the military instructor, and he thinks that there's that grenade, but it's a fake grenade.
Yeah, but that's confusing, though.
You can see the pulse in his head.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Those little touches are what Tarkovsky does.
See, that part
well.
Is confusing to me because I'm like, okay, did this kid think he was throwing off an actual grenade? Were they doing a practice run? Like, is this guy just so shell-shocked that he didn't realize it was a dummy? Or, you know, like, things like that. And I guess, like, it's all there, and I kind of just said it, but it's the weirdness of it all. It's like the kid, another kid pulls the pin, the kid rolls down, throws it, and then they all seem scared, though. It's not just the shell-shocked instructor. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It lost me at a certain point, and unfortunately, sometime, you know that feeling like when you're watching a movie and it has you, and then it starts to lose you, and you're like, you're hesitant. You're like, no, win me back, you can do it. And you're like rooting for it to win you back, and it just like doesn't quite. And I feel so silly saying that about Mirror of all things. Like, I'm not talking about the new Mission Impossible movie or something. Like, this is Mirror.
Exactly,
like, I understand.
Which I think that if you watch it once more, I think you're going to feel different.
I honestly might. It could very well be the case. It was a matter for me of just the way that it was put together. Like, at a certain, I loved, obviously he loves playing around with like different like sepia toned versus black and white, yeah, versus color. He's done that in a lot of his other films. I think my issue with it is, and I can sense that he had trouble putting it together, because I think in this final edit, for me at least, it just doesn't quite sing the way that it should, in the way, yeah, that like, look at Tree of Life. Mm-hmm. Of like, mm-hmm, all of like that movie has you the whole time, and yeah, I think it's doing a very similar thing. And it, for me, Tree of Life just kind of like, I'm probably gonna get roasted for saying this, but
no, I don't think so.
So I think Tree of Life is kind of seen as one of those, oh, like baby's first art film or something. I think it's a great movie. It's a masterpiece.
I think it's a masterpiece too. And it's actually, I remember one time I was browsing through the top 250, like I said, like, okay, what's under number 100 on this list, and like, if not the next one or the one below it, is Tree of Life. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah, like so new. It's like the newest one. It's got to, yeah, be the newest one in the top 200.
For now, until the new list.
Yeah. I love Tree of Life.
No, it's great. I still remember seeing it in the theater, and there was a sign outside the box office that's like, no refunds will be given for Tree of Life. So you could just imagine all these people like, yo, what's the new Brad Pitt movie? And they like go,
oh,
and they're like,
God,
what the fuck?
I never saw it in a theater. That's been my dream, is to see it in a theater. It's never beautiful. Lined up. It's come along a few times with the American Cinematheque, and for some reason I just couldn't go.
Well, next time you gotta go.
I have to. It's one of those. I really have to.
But you think that's an apt comparison, right? This and Tree of Life?
100%. So this is, let's talk about this. Sorry, I'm flipping the page. I think that this movie is a, like, it's the hazy world of memories.
Yeah.
But it's also almost about the way that history repeats itself. Like, how we are the essence of what came before us. How we as humans seem to be on this cycle.
Well, just the
of,
very
like,
fact
repeated,
that...
Yeah, the very fact that they're played by the same people,
exactly,
right?
The same actress plays,
yeah,
the mom. And,
yeah,
exactly.
We have the same heartbreaks, the same wars, the same love. It's just like... There's one poem in it that I really, really love. It's the one about everything is immortal. And I realize it plays during like the Sino-Soviet border footage. But it's that poem about how everything is immortal. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
And it's so arresting, because I feel like a popular subject of art is like the transient nature of life and how everything changes. But for a poem to just come out and say, everything is immortal, neither darkness nor death exist on this earth, while we're literally watching war footage.
Yeah.
And then it also says the grandfathers and grandchildren are at the same table. Like, it has some line about that. Again, you have the same actors playing different generations of people who are related. And then another line from it I love is, I'll summon up any century at will. And that's what he's doing with this movie, right? He's literally summoning up different centuries at will.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that that's beautiful. And it's like, of course, we can take the name Mirror. Like, it could be just him, like, reflecting on his life and his soul. Or, like, him reflecting the same path his dad went on. Because, like, or the character, not Tarkovsky. Because the dad also is, you know, the parents were divorced. Or, again, it could just be the way that everything reflects itself. Life reflects itself. Humans reflect other humans. Like, yeah. I love that. And the images... It's not just the poetry, obviously. It's mom young in a towel and then looking in a mirror and she's old. Like, mm-hmm. It's, I don't know. It's,
I know.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, there's so much here. Like, I love it. It's like I simultaneously love this movie, but I'm like frustrated with it. I like love it. And then I'm also have my reservations about it. But it's like when it's when it does that stuff, like that scene where she's looking in the mirror and she's old, it's like so good. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing like it. And it takes that, again, like nothing needs to be said. Like, it's pure visual storytelling, yeah. Even though there is this great poetry by his father over the movie. And there's a decent amount of dialogue, too.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, no, I don't.
And then, yeah, no, go ahead.
I was just about to say, some of my I feel like my favorite Tarkovsky movies have less dialogue, like Nostalgia, which is like long stretches with no one saying a thing, or like Stalker, yeah, too, which has a little more than Nostalgia, but it's you are gonna love those movies, Jackie. Like, if you love Mirror,
I know
you are in for such a treat.
I'm so excited. I have such a busy weekend, otherwise I was literally just gonna sit home and watch Stalker and Nostalgia. I really wish I could.
And don't miss The Sacrifice with Erlen Josephson.
He's in Nostalgia too, though.
Yeah. Wait. Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. He is.
Look at me. I know about it even though I haven't seen it. But Greg, don't you love when this movie gets really ghostly?
No. Just kidding.
But yes. There's a ghost in the house.
Of course.
And it's so great. And again, it's during that first sequence, which I love, when she's visited by the doctor, which is so random, but great. Yeah. I love it.
The woman disappears and like the steam from her cup.
So
her
there's
mug.
That stuff, which is great. And of course, that is about like the national identity of Russia and those letters that are being read, which is, again, like deja vu. You know, there's with the coin, you know, when Alexei picks up the coin that his mom dropped on the floor and he gets that shock.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I feel like this has happened before. And then it leads into that scene with the mysterious ghostly woman.
Yeah.
But I mean, in the house, like after she talks to the doctor, we're back at like the first sequence. After she talks to the doctor and she's walking towards the cabin, like a bottle just falls off the windowsill. Did you notice
yeah.
that?
Uh-huh.
And then again, when she says like, there's a fire, by the way, I love when she's like, there's a fire, but don't scream.
Yeah.
When they're running away. And again, like a bottle falls off the table out of nowhere. And just the way that's shot, them looking at the fire through the mirror, the way it moves through the rooms,
I mean,
it's like,
there's a reason why that's one of the most famous shots in like cinematic history.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you think that the people who discover the fire, they start talking and they're like, oh, Klanka, like, where is he? Like, he could be in there. And they cry out, they go like, Klanka. And then he emerges out of nowhere, but in Alexei's home.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
He goes, what is it? Like, I'm here. But no one responds. I think Klanka's dead. I think he's a ghost.
Oh,
I think he died in that fire.
Interesting. See, now I'm more interested.
Right? Isn't that like, because it's just so odd. Why would he shoot it like that? Why would it be like that? Why would it be so mysterious?
Well, while we're on the topic of magic and ghosts and stuff, let's talk about that intro video.
Oh my God.
And then
let's talk about
also,
it.
Yeah, also the levitation, which is the elephant in the room.
I love it. I love it. Ooh. Okay. The intro, which is a young boy getting some sort of like hypnotherapy to cure him of his stutter.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? It's just so funny because Alexei turns on a TV and it seems like he's watching that on TV.
Yeah.
But I think the only thing you can take away from it is the ending when he goes like, I can speak. And then it's just like the credits of Mirror.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, what
is
it?
I think so too. It ties in some weird way.
It's just like,
it's definitely supposed to be TV because you can see the boom in it. And
you
like,
can see the boom,
that's
yeah.
not something that Tarkovsky, like he was so like painterly and such a perfectionist that like that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, the boom is hilarious. I think it's just like, it's his way of like, because she says about like tension, right? She goes like, I'm taking all the tension away from your head, away from your mouth, and I'm putting it into your hands. Like she's like moving this tension and then he can like speak clearly. So maybe it's just like, it's almost like Tarkovsky, like, getting this all off his chest, or I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I don't know either.
It's so mesmerizing, and it's such an enigma. It's like, I don't know. It reminds me a little bit of, but not really. Do you remember in A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie?
Mm-hmm.
You know the opening of that movie where it's just a random scene in a random village?
Yeah, about the Dibuk or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although that one has like a little bit clearer of a thread to like the actual theme of the movie.
Right. Well, I mean, who's to say here? I'm not quite sure what he's getting at with that, honestly.
I don't think it's very... I don't know. I don't think it's something definite. I think it's just like...
It's just so funny that we're doing this film after we've done a couple Bergmans.
Right,
and
right.
These are all in the same universe of just like... communicating. Yeah, like what is this? Especially with Persona, like really decoding things. It's... I mean, you know where I fall in that camp. Here's the thing.
Exactly, and that's why you don't like this movie.
No.
Which is a shame.
Here's the thing, too. I don't dislike this movie. I like... It just... It's like unwrapping the best piece of candy you've ever seen in your life, but someone dropped it on the floor and there's like a couple hairs on it. That's what it's like. Whereas like the rest of Tarkovsky's films are like clean candy.
Greg, you're the one who just wanted to dissect the opening. I didn't even suggest that.
No. I mean, look, I think it's fun to an extent. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm just saying like Tarkovsky, especially as a filmmaker, where I don't put that much thought into like what this scene really...
But that's what I'm saying. You don't need to for this movie. It's almost like Space Odyssey.
Hmm.
Like, you know how in Space Odyssey...
Well, Space Odyssey has a through line, though, in terms of like...
So does this. It's about like haziness and memory and childhood and... Yeah.
Yeah, I guess Space Odyssey, especially if you read the book, which we talked about in our episode, is that whole Stargate sequence, there is an ABC. Like, this happens, then this happens, then this happens. Like, and Kubrick is just shooting it in a really sort of... abstract way, but with this there's not such a clear definition. It's like, oh, this could kind of be this could also be this. I think what's so cool about Tarkovsky's films are they are this dream world. Like, it is a dream world that you can enter, and it's unlike anything in my life. So
yeah,
there's a museum here in LA. It's actually in Culver City, called the Museum of Jurassic Technology. Have you been there?
No.
Have you heard of it? Do you know what it is?
Jurassic Technology?
Okay, so it's so cool. You have to go. But essentially what it is it's like an art piece on museums. So you go in and it's really dark. It's very dimly lit. I also, the one time I went there, I was stoned out of my mind. Like, my friends and I were smoking some weed beforehand, and then like I left my wallet in the car, so I like ran, and then by running I got even higher, and I was like, by the time I got there, my friends were already inside. So I just kind of stumbled through, so stoned. But like, so I should go back when I'm like sober. But it is unreal. It is just like, it taps into that same sort of like dream world that Tarkovsky, like the whole time I was in there, I was like, I want to watch Stalker right now. And so it's like the closest I've seen to like a physical manifestation of like, it's probably the best way to describe it is it's part Tarkovsky, part like, Quay Brothers.
Okay.
Do you know them?
No.
These kind of like avant-garde stop motion animated films that are like also very nightmarish and surreal and unsettling, but like in a really great way. Anyway, that's, I don't know where I was going with that.
When you said Jurassic Technology, literally thought you meant like the sticks that cavemen used to make fire.
No, because there were no humans in Jurassic times. That's the whole pun on the name. Like, there was no Jurassic technology.
That's so funny.
But it's cool because it's this weird winding crate. Like, there's weird like stuffed animals like in like taxidermied animals behind glass. I remember there's this room where it's like a bunch of like model like trailers, like trailer parks.
Yeah.
And you work your way up through this building, this museum, and on each floor there's like videos you can watch, and there's like string you're supposed to play with, and at the very top of the building it opens up into this like tea room. It's like a tea garden.
Okay.
And there was someone like gently playing guitar when I got there, and they like handed me a cup of tea, and it was like so delightful and such a contrast to the whole museum that had come before. But it just reminded me that whole time I was like, I so want to watch Tarkovsky right now, just in terms of like that indescribable world. It's
ethereal.
Just, yeah, totally ethereal.
But I find it so shocking that in the end you didn't know that those were his like young parents in,
you know,
the,
why,
because
at that point I was like kind of checked out.
But it's so beautiful. Like, that's my,
of course,
that's one of my favorite
beautiful
parts, because it's intercut with like, first of all, leading into that scene is like the last walk through a house, right? And it's through these like curtains, and you're in the house, and then you land at the window and you see a figure sitting in the distance.
It's a ghost.
It's not, though.
Just
it's the mom as an old woman. And
right,
then baby Alexei goes up to her, and I immediately thought of the line. It's a little earlier when Natalia and him, his ex-wife, are like having one of their discussions, and she says, She needs nothing but for you to become a child again so she can hold and protect you.
Hmm.
I love that.
Maybe there's some 2001 in this. I would be surprised if Tarkovsky hadn't seen that and been inspired by it in some way.
And then you have that amazing, like, it's almost like a match on action because, like, young mom, like, turns her head and then she sees her old version of herself and then she turns back to the dad. And I love it. And then I love that in the last shot of the movie, it's young mom and old mom, like it's the old mom walking baby Alexei, but then you can see young mom in the distance and she's smoking her like classic cigarette. I love it.
It's really striking. Yeah.
Should we talk about the like heartbreak of it all? Because this is a truly, in terms of like representing a divorce, I think that it is so sad. And it's so sad without ever having seen them be together. And of course, it has to do with the levitating and the washing of the hair. But it's also just, it's so tender. Like, I love, it's the scene after the whole thing with the doctor has happened. She's walking back to the cabin. And it's like, I think it's the first poem. Like, the first poem is read and it's like a love poem. And it's a beautiful love poem. And she's standing in the window and she starts, like, you just see her crying while you're hearing this poetry. And like, what? Like, it's just perfect to me. Like, that is perfection to me.
So much about this film is perfect. And then it's just, you know.
What? Okay. and then you have,
but also, who am I to say, to critique a Tarkovsky? Like, who the fuck am I?
What about?
That's why I'm like, I feel like I'm failing this movie. Like, I'm not up to this movie's standards yet.
I'm not judging. I don't judge.
Sometimes you do.
But I just feel like if you sat down again, you're really busy right now because you have a million things going on. I know you do. And you're like rushing to do a lot of work. And I think that if you rewatched this movie at a calmer time in your life, I think you'll feel differently.
And you know what? I'm going to do that.
I think you should.
In fact, sooner rather than later.
Can we talk about, since we're on the subject of like mom and her heartbreak, can we talk about when her coworker like scolds her and like roasts her?
Oh God, that comes out of nowhere?
Comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
It's so crazy. First of all, I love the way that scene is shot. Oh, like, God. I love the like frame rate and how it's slow.
Oh, I was going to talk about the slightly slowed down slow motion in some of the scenes.
Yeah, slightly, like ever so slightly when she's running to the actual printing press.
Yeah.
And the sound is really heightened. You can hear her breathing and her footsteps.
And his mother actually worked in a printing press, Tarkovsky.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie's really autobiographical.
Yeah.
But like, why does the coworker roast her like that?
I don't know. It comes out of nowhere because she really, she's like laughing and stuff. And then
she's like, oh my God, she turns. Remind me of someone.
Yeah. I know.
But it's like, I don't know, like I read a few essays and stuff and one of them said something like, it just showed the way that in like Stalinist Russia, like, people who were like ever so like slightly self-indulgent or like selfish in a way, or I don't know, just like kind of, not that she's a drama queen, but like seeming like there's like a drama around them,
right?
Like that would be like scolded.
Yeah, I don't know,
but it's
I don't
just
know.
But here's the thing, you don't need to know that,
right?
I don't think you need to know that. You just watch that scene and you're like, holy shit, like she's killing her right now and she's crying and I don't know.
Yeah,
it's
she really
crazy.
Goes for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I also love the scene when she's like in the shower directly after.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good. I don't know what it is about it. It's like,
it's all about those workplace showers.
Yeah. And she ends and she's just like, oh, God. And she just like puts her head in hands.
Jesus.
And I'm like, whew.
Our former workplace had a shower. Do you remember that?
Didn't.
Yeah, it did. On the second floor.
You're lying.
A couple people would take showers there.
You're lying.
Wait, are you serious? You never went to the upstairs bathroom?
No.
Oh, yeah, there's a shower in there.
Why?
Oh, it's in the men's room only. It's in the men's room. I swear to God, it's true.
Did you ever use it?
I never used it.
That is really weird.
Yeah.
And why did the men's room only have it?
I don't know. It's weird.
Okay.
Did you notice that there's a poster in this for Andrei Rublev?
Yes, I did.
In Alexei's apartment.
I saw that.
Also so cool. I love how much of this movie is like Alexei's POV.
Yeah.
But he does it in this really graceful way. Like, it's not like this handheld, like you've seen that.
It's not,
like,
yeah, exactly.
And yeah, maybe I could see like Gaspar Noé watching this and getting some inspiration for Into the Void or something.
It's
but just
so
this
cool.
Like, yeah, most of the scenes with Alexei are like POV.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's floating. That scene where he first talks to his mom on the phone and the camera just kind of floats through
his
apartment.
Through his apartment. I love that.
I love too that like Tarkovsky is all about natural lighting, and he's all about like, you're in an apartment, you can't really see things that well because it's dark, and like it, I love that look, that just like natural light, just
what about
twilight
when they go to
look.
That neighbor's house, which neighbor's for what house. I think oh, is an
yeah,
abortion, but
right, yeah, I see. I don't know what the fuck was happening there.
I think it's an abortion.
You know what? Honestly, he could have given us a little more. Let's just be real. He could have given us a little bit.
Okay, here's what happens, right?
You're going to say that because it's through the point of view of a kid that he wouldn't have known his mom was getting an abortion, so therefore the film is potential, like the film is...
excused.
Right, like it's...
No, that wasn't what I was going to say. I was actually going to say that when she asks her to slaughter the chicken...
Uh-huh. I'm so glad we don't see it.
Oh my God, first of all, another chicken slaughter? Like, what is with sight and sound? The people who vote on this
list have a
real problem with chickens.
What was the other
this
chicken
This is like
one?
Our 12th movie with a chicken sacrifice.
Oh, wait.
Color of Pomegranates.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There was another, Tukibuki, I'm pretty sure it happened.
Well, that was cows, yeah.
No. I think there's a chicken in that too.
You're probably right.
Thankfully,
it's off screen.
It's off screen, but she goes, oh, I can't do it. The neighbor is saying this. I can't do it. First of all, that neighbor is Tarkovsky's wife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She goes, oh, I can't do it. Like, I'm pregnant and I'll become sick.
Right.
And mom literally says, but I too. And then the
like,
neighbor's
I've never
like,
done it.
No, she means like, I'm pregnant too. Or like, but she's not technically pregnant anymore. That's the thing.
Oh, I didn't get that. I thought she was just trying to get out of it because she hadn't done it before.
No, she goes, but I too. And the neighbor's like, you too what?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess you're right.
And then
it's there.
She goes into the dream where she's levitating, and this is what she says. She says, "It's a shame I only see you when I'm sick." And if we've already established that, like killing a rooster makes pregnant women sick, come on, it's there.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess I didn't look deep enough. You're right. I have been busy. I feel like it's funny. I watched this in the morning. I gave it the whole morning. I sat down with a cup of tea. But yeah, I need to rewatch this. I need to revisit it.
It's so obvious. I love you. That line kills me.
Yeah. I will say, going back briefly to the chicken, that hearing the chicken scream, even though it's off camera, was almost enough to put me off chicken.
That's so funny. Yeah, it's a horrible scream.
Yeah.
I feel like we didn't really talk about like the cinematic language of this movie.
I mean, because the cinematic language, well, we talked about the slow-mo, we talked about the look, the graceful tracking shots, the one-ers, we talked about it. I mean, the natural lighting, like it's because it's its own thing. Like it's intangible, really. Like Tarkovsky's a magician. I don't know how he pulled some of this stuff off.
Yeah.
Because it's so graceful and beautiful and ethereal. And it's like, how?
Yeah. What about the scene with the doctor? And then when he's walking away and he stops for a moment to let the wind pass through him?
Oh my God.
Ugh.
Yeah. Jesus
That's
Christ.
That's beautiful.
Here's the thing with burning houses too. There's a burning house in The Sacrifice. But it's like the timing. So like when we see the famous shot in this movie with the burning house, the camera, it starts like in the kitchen or something at this table and turns and looks into a mirror and goes down a hall.
Yep.
And like, you cannot fuck that up because this house is only going to burn for so long. And
yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
I can't even imagine.
And then mom going to the well and then going.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The house in the background. I love that there's like this really cool sequence while young Alexei is sitting in that neighbor's house, presumably waiting for his mom's abortion to be done. And
Just the lantern in the corner and stuff.
The lantern, and then it goes into this sequence of like mirrors, and then it lands on the girl with chapped lips.
Oh yeah.
It's
they're so chapped that they're bleeding.
They really
wanted to get that point across.
Yeah.
Like, this is her. See, they're bleeding.
Yeah. And then like talking about the black and white and like the monochrome, it's not even just black and white. It's like sepia. It's like I like when there's this one moment, it's like the second conversation he has with his wife, his ex-wife, And it's black. Did you notice it's black and white? It's when the burning bush is happening. And then it goes into color as he's recalling his childhood. And that was like so Wizard of Oz-esque.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Me.
Yeah.
Like I loved that.
Yeah.
Which is weird because it's always the reverse. It's like the memory is in black and white.
Right.
So I really liked that.
Yeah. I forget his name, but the doctor in the beginning who's standing there as the wind blows, he's a Tarkovsky regular.
I love him.
Yeah.
He's great.
He reminds me of like, he's like the Soviet Robert Duvall.
Yes. Oh my God. You're so right. You're so right. But like, I always come back to that doctor sequence because it is, I feel like it is the most like cohesive, you know? And it's like just the camera work in that scene.
Oh, it's incredible.
Amazing. The way it like moves from like her face to the bush to like the back of her head with her hair in a bun and... Oh my God, it's just,
I think, because we've talked about Bergman so much recently and, you know, they're so connected in so many ways. I do think that Tarkovsky took what Bergman had established and pushed it further. And I do think almost in a way, Tarkovsky's best work is almost bests Bergman just because it's like he learned from the master and then he like took it to another level.
But the thing about Bergman is that, like, it's just a different movie. Like,
it is.
It's a very small, talky. Like,
well, not necessarily. It depends on the movie, but yeah, I mean,
most of them are
pieces. But yeah, I mean, a lot of Tarkovsky's are too. This is well, but then he had like Andrei Rublev and stuff. It depends on the movie. It depends on the movie. But like, my favorite Tarkovsky movies, like Stalker and Nostalgia and Sacrifice and stuff, like. They feel very insular, like they are very like small stories, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but told kind of like cosmically, which is the appeal,
right? Whereas like I feel like Bergman is not told cosmically.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, I'm not trying to put down Bergman. Bergman's one of my all time favorites. In fact, I feel weird. I don't know why everything always needs to be compared. I feel like I always jump to that. Yeah.
You know how you roast me for like analyzing shit? Why do you compare shit?
I don't know. Sometimes it's like a easy thing to pull, you know, you're like, oh, this and this. I don't know. I should stop doing that.
Yeah, stop.
I love both Tarkovsky and Bergman. One is not necessarily better than the other.
I mean, is it even possible to choose a favorite sight in this movie?
Should we do Sight and Sound? I feel like it's about time, right?
Yeah. Well, that was my way of doing a cool transition.
You had a great transition, and then I made it clunky because I stepped in.
You just have to ruin everything.
I do. No, let's hear your sight.
Well, everything that I just named counts.
But if you have to pick one.
Ugh. Okay. Considering I keep going back to this scene, I'm pretty sure it's just like the money shot of mom on the fence, like with the pink sky and she's smoking a cigarette. I know it's so like cliche.
It's the cover that Criterion
used. But it's just so beautiful. It's that. And if I had to tie with another one, there's this like one dream sequence where it's in black and white. And it's all these linens just like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That is, and again, it's one of those moving through the room shots.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That.
I love those images when like the house is coming down, like the roof is coming
down. Yes. And it's like, yeah, their house is literally breaking apart. Like dad left. And yeah.
I'm going to watch this again soon. I might like retract this in a future episode and be like, I was completely wrong about Mir.
Do it. I also love this Spanish girl dancing. I think that is amazing.
Yeah.
And then, like, she gets slapped. And they're like, oh, we've been trying to teach you for years and now you dance? Like, what?
What a Bergman thing to do, have someone get slapped.
I know, right? What's your favorite sight?
Again, mine is a bigger cop out than yours. It's the shot with the burning house.
No, that's not a bigger. Mine is a bigger cop out.
No, because I feel like the burning house is like the most iconic image from the movie. So yours is a little bit, a slightly deeper cut than mine. But yeah, the way that the camera starts in like the kitchen, the kids leave the table, it like stays on the table, it like
it's amazing.
Backs out of the kitchen, it goes down the hall, it looks through the mirror, then it turns around and goes out to like the porch. And tracks along the porch as like this house burns. I mean, come on.
It's incredible.
Come on. You do that, you could just retire afterwards. Like there's no
I would have retired. If I was him, you know? I would have retired after this.
But I'm so glad he didn't because all my favorite movies like came after this. What about sound? What's your favorite sound?
It's so hard. Again, this one's really hard. It's a tie. Oh my God, it's a three-way. Oh my God, it's a four-way.
What? Come on. That's excessive.
Okay, fine.
Pick one.
It's probably the sound of the water dripping into the basin when
that's mine.
It's so good.
That's mine.
So clean and crisp and beautiful. But
she's in slow mo, but the sound is not in slow mo.
The sound is not. Another one that I love is the popping lantern when he's at that neighbor's house.
Oh my God. Lantern. What a striking image that is too. Yeah.
It's the image and the popping noise of the flame. I love it. And then it moves into like the coals, and then it's the girl with the chapped lips and all that jazz.
God, he's so good at shooting that stuff. It's just, it's enough to just discourage you for the rest of your life attempting.
And I think that this movie does such a good job of joining sight and sound so much. Like every time they're doing the rifle practice, the music, the poetry, rifle practice, you can hear the crunching of the snow. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
A close one for me was the last shot where the camera just goes into the woods.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Fuck.
Does our good friend Ms. Kale say about this?
So I couldn't find anything Pauline had to say about this one. I looked, I searched online. I have a couple of her books from that cover this time period, and I could not find a Pauline Kale review. So I don't know that she reviewed it, because I don't think it was had this huge
I'm not surprised. Release.
So no Pauline, but
looks like we're stuck with Letterboxd.
We're stuck with the Letterboxd clowns.
5 stars. Broken mirror in the streets. Levitating woman in the sheets.
Oh my God. I've got 0.5 star. Peasant farmer shoegaze. Poetry from people who don't read poetry. It gave me nothing to relate to in the first 30 minutes, and that's when you just got to bounce.
That's so funny. It's funny because we mentioned how the first 30 minutes are like kind of the strongest.
Yeah, I think so.
5 stars. I can't explain how I feel because my eyes are full of tears and my ears are full of Bach and my heart is full of joy.
Oh.
Yeah, the Bach in this is incredible.
Yes, so well used. And it's not like really, Ode to really Joy. Well, it's not like the shit that you hear a million times. Wait,
no.
Ode to Joy is not Bach, is it? Fuck. Isn't that Beethoven?
I think so.
But yeah, it's not the same shit that you always hear.
Yeah, I love something about like classical music in movies. There's a playlist on Spotify called Classical Movie Moments.
Oh, love it.
And it's like just like the most famous songs, classical songs in movies. Yeah.
2 stars here. I don't think I understand history or Russian cinematography enough to appreciate this film. Doubled up with being sleepy, I got probably 5% of this movie. We'll need to rewatch and check it out some more. What is Russian cinematography?
Exactly. Understanding Russian cinematography. Like, you don't have to read Eisenstein to understand.
An image is an image.
An image, yeah. It's, yeah.
Some of
funny.
The best images ever put to celluloid.
That's really funny.
As indifferent as I am to this film, let it be known that the cinematography in this movie is truly like one of the greats.
Is that you reading a review?
No, that's me. That's me.
So. Oh. You're I thought you said you liked it.
Well,
you said you liked it.
I don't dislike it. That's what I like. I don't know. Who knows how I feel about this movie?
Okay, 0.5 star. I don't like this guy's films. They're slow and boring and kind of badly made.
Badly made. See, that's not what I would not say that about this film. Someone gave it 2 stars and said, and again, this might sum it up for a lot of people. They say, I'd like every shot of this framed in my house, but also I'd like to never watch this ever again. ZZZ.
I'm going to leave it on a funny note, a light note. 5 stars. In Soviet Russia, mind bends you.
There you go.
You know, I'm looking forward to you rewatching this.
I'm looking forward to rewatching it too. But this has prompted me, like I do know, I now want to go revisit some of my Tarkovsky faves just because, you know, this made me kind of miss them a little bit. Like, oh, I want the full experience. You know, I don't know. What am I saying? Who knows? I'm going to look back on this episode a couple years from now, like, what the fuck? But you know, look, our job is to be honest in the moment and our impression of the movie in that time in our lives. And this is how it resonated with me on this time. So.
Yeah, of course.
What are we doing next week? We are doing Spirit of the Beehive. Victor Uresz's Spirit of the Beehive, which is a great one for Halloween. We did not plan this because it is on the list. Ping pong just worked in our favor.
Ping pong magic.
That we will be doing a sort of Halloween-y movie for our post or for our pre-Halloween episode.
So exciting.
So yeah, that will be our last episode for this before we take a break for November. So do join us next week. If you haven't seen Spirit of the Beehive and you love like Pan's Labyrinth or any of that stuff, like you must watch Spirit of the Beehive. It is basically where all of that came from. It's a great movie. It's a beloved classic. What can I say? The basic premise is this traveling movie show of the film Frankenstein.
Yeah.
So they go around from town to town and show the film. It takes place in the 30s, I think.
It's also funny because it's set during the Spanish Civil War,
yeah,
isn't it? Or like
yeah.
right after.
I believe so.
It's just ping pong. Look at yeah. that. Yeah. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But do you ever think about how weird that is?
It really
worked
out.
What are the odds that like two movies back to back that have nothing to do with each other both feature the Spanish Civil War?
Yeah. And again, that this one lined up so well for Halloween.
I just, this ping pong is really, it's a it's mystery to me.
So yeah, come back next week for Spirit of the Weehive. The Weehive.
Is that like the West Hollywood Beehive?
So yeah, come back next week for Spirit of the Beehive. We're going to have a great time. This has been Mirror, our first Tarkovsky, and not only. Until then, I'm Greg.
I'm Jackie.
And we'll see you next week.
This has been an official podcast of the Arroyo Film Club. Seen and Heard is Jacqueline Pistagian and Greg Kleinschmidt. Theme music by Andrew Cox. You can find us at seenandheardpod.com.